obviously the value of you're setting through your sermon the value of doing that. And then basically, if I could liken it to a sales pitch, and I don't mean to in any way denigrate preaching, but in a sense, you are selling the concepts and ideas. You want to close. You have to come to a closing point where you ask for the sale. My father used to train salesmen before he went home to be with the Lord. And one of the things that salesmen would always have a hard time doing was actually asking the customer, will you buy my product? Mm-hmm. They were good at everything else but that. In fact, there's a movie, Glengarry Glen Ross, which is kind of a bizarre film in many ways, but there's a line in the film that says, always be closing if you want it, if you want the knife set. Always be closing. So if I'm going to always be closing, I have to think about how I'm going to say to the people, all right, this is what Jesus is saying. How, what are you going to do? What are you going to do to respond? I've laid out how I think you can begin this process. Will you do it? You're actually calling on them to receive and in some way
to buy the knife set.
To buy the knife set, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, let me take it a step further. I would say maybe the best way to do that is not to tell a story, not to recap the scriptures, but to say, I think you need just a quiet time, and I have purposely ended my sermon early, and I'm going to give 3 minutes of absolute silence. And I want you to have your ears open to the Lord. He won't speak to your ears, but the ears of your heart, I guess I'm saying, as to when this week would be a good time to set aside that half hour to hour. And you say, that would be, maybe it's early in the morning, maybe it's early when you come back, maybe it's when the kids are all down, whatever. But that's the time I'm going to look forward to sitting at your feet, Jesus, and I'm going to put into practice the instructions that have been given me by the pastor. And I think this has to be resolved in your head before you leave church today. Now, that's a totally different kind of conclusion than, you know, is the real good story that rocks people. But the truth is, once they get out of this church service, it's going to be hard for them to process where that close comes, the close you're talking about. Do you want the knives or don't you? And so that may be the best way I conclude that sermon, is to say, okay, now it's all done. If you still have no answer to my question, I'm open to counseling with you, whatever. But my guess is that the Lord will speak very clearly to every one of you in your heart, and you will say, okay, now I've got that time set aside, and I'm going to work toward that. Okay? Does that sound, make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the question again, just in terms of expectation, you might even, as a pastor, say, I would like for some of you to report back and say how it went. Now, how many do you think, if you have 100 people in the congregation, how many of the 100 do you think are going to report back to you as to how that time went? I'm guessing if you could get 4 people to report back to you as to they did it and it, how it went, I mean, that was a highly, highly successful sermon in my mind.
Right.
Okay. So we're basically saying, how do you close this, and is it going to work? You know, if you think all 100 are going to come running to me and say, my life is transformed, that's not going to happen. Yeah. But would that be a better closing? And I don't know. There is no best way to do it. But that might be a better closing than actually the most powerful story you could imagine.
It also occurs to me that in a congregation of significant number, there may be one or two people that already have a rich devotional life and are spending time regularly with the Lord. Maybe it's possible to encourage them to share some of the joy that they've experienced over however long they've done that with some of their friends during the week, to encourage them along the way. That way you're at least giving recognition to the one or two that might be there who are already doing it. And you might even encourage them to qualitatively examine what they're doing to make sure that they're not just doing something out of rote, but they're genuinely giving the Lord an opportunity
to
speak to them.
That's great. Your grade's going up again.
Well, that's good. I need to get above that B minus.
Do we have time to do one other text?
We do. Let's do it.
Okay, I have my finger in the one all along, so I know where the other one is. Okay, This is Matthew 6. It's out of the Sermon on the Mount where we were. Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets. This is, I think that's his humor again, you know. I'm going to do something. Watch here. I don't want you to miss. I don't do it that often. Don't announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets. To be honored by men, I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So this is the thing of doing acts of Christian love, but not doing them so other people see. I'm guilty of that sometimes. You know, I don't know if you noticed what I just did, but that was a pretty good thing. I'm quite a Christian, you know. ever been there, done that, you know?
One of the things that popped into my head as you were sharing that passage is in one of the 50-day spiritual adventures, one of the disciplines is to do secret acts of Christian love or secret acts of kindness. And it's based on this passage. And it's trying to get people to understand that we do things in the name of Christ to help others, and we do it without anyone knowing about it, completely, secretly, and as anonymously as possible, because we're doing it for Jesus. We're not doing it for any kind of earthly recognition.
Yeah, I remember very well doing that. And I, you know, you give flowers to somebody, don't say who it's from, or I gave money to somebody and didn't say who it was. And then they don't know who it's from, so they have to thank the Lord. Yeah. I remember thinking at the time, I don't like this as well, Lord, as when they know that I'm the one who gave it. You know, I kind of... But over time, that's the way Jesus says to do it, so that you're living your life before God as opposed to others. Now you give illustrations of that in your sermon. You want them to do secret acts of love, not, you know, I will give the money, but put my name on the naming of the place or whatever, you know. So it's quite contrary to the way most people act. And it was very hard. I don't know if you remember that adventure in doing it yourself, mm-hmm. but you kind of, you know, I don't know if I like this as well as, I don't go as far as to the trumpets playing before I do it, but I at least like a little recognition.
Yeah, you know? At least like the person that I'm benefiting to know it was me.
Yeah.
To think a little better of me.
Little, at least a flute cadenza or something, you know.
It's fascinating because I'm at least neutral in most people's eyes, but every once in a while there's someone that really doesn't like me at all. And I decided during that adventure to show an act of kindness completely anonymously to a person that really didn't like me at all. And they were so surprised that someone had done something kind to them. They talked about it constantly for weeks. They continued to treat me with the same level of disparagement they had before because they didn't know it was me. And there was moments when I thought, how ironic, but I also kept thinking that there was a smile and a twinkle in my Father's eyes, God, because... I had been obedient that way.
That's a wonderful story. That's really neat. So we were talking about how we conclude that sermon. And once again, that's the kind of thing where a person has to process. And most of the time, processing is not something the church gives opportunity for. And you have to understand that as a pastor, once that person gets out of the service, there are a thousand things that come, you know. They're looking after the kids, where are we going to go and eat? And there's this noise, and then the day tends to take over. So if you don't give opportunity for them in quiet to begin to work that through, the adventure was great because in the adventure, here was the assignment, and they were keeping a journal every day, and they were constantly going back to that. And now have I done my secret act of Christian love? And that was a 50-day adventure, which involved 7 weeks. So that was 7 secret acts of Christian love, which was how long does it take? Well, I get pretty good at that. So you say, I either like this now or I don't like it, and you continue it or you don't continue it. But somehow you have to, in concluding, say, you're going to have to process this sometime. Now, either I give you time to do it now. In fact, a lot of times, as soon as the sermon's over and a song begins to be sung, if it's a hymn, even worse, it detracts from what the Holy Spirit is saying. I don't think we realize sometimes as we program, even though the hymn is on the same theme, it gives people a way to think, I've done what you said. I sang a hymn about it, you know. No, that's not what I said. I said you need to learn to be comfortable and delighted in doing secret acts of Christian love, because that's what Jesus is teaching here. And if it's all done and everybody agrees and says that's a great devotional thought, but nobody does it, we've failed. So the question is, I'm concluding, is how do I make the sale? I think you said that very well. How do I make this sale so people actually begin to incorporate in their lives what Jesus talked about? And that's how I want to conclude.
And again, we're not talking about something that's independent of the Holy Spirit. We're talking about doing something that's very effective that the Spirit can then take and use to touch people's hearts and motivate them to do what's right.
Right.
Where are we going next?
Oh, if you want to find out, this is where I am in my mind. I'd like to talk, we've talked about openings and closings. I'd like to talk about illustrations. And my feeling is that many times illustrations, I'll explain this later, illustrations are the tail that wags the dog, and that's not good. And they become the dominant things in preachers' minds. And I want to say, let me tell you what illustrations can do and how to use them effectively.
Very good. You've been listening to the SermonCoach.com podcast with Dr. David Maines. We invite you to come back and also to always go to our website, sermon-coach.com. You'll find lots of good resources. Come back, won't you?